Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge des Remote Work Podcasts von Digital Kompakt. Ich bin Angelina, die Gründerin von Acework. Wir unterstützen Unternehmen dabei, besser auf Distanz zusammenzuarbeiten und helfen ihnen, die Mitarbeiter zu finden, die remote ready sind und perfekt in ihre Teams passen. Ihr lernt heute in diesem Podcast, wie ihr besser mit Freelancern und Agenturen zusammenarbeiten könnt, wenn diese nicht vor Ort sind, also remote arbeiten. Außerdem, was ihr beachten müsst, wenn ihr einen Freelancer für ein neues Projekt auswählt und was die Human Cloud ist und wie ihr sie für euer Business nutzen könnt. Dafür habe ich heute Matt Mottola eingeladen. Und weil Matt überhaupt kein Deutsch spricht, wechseln wir jetzt zu Englisch. Okay, hi Matt. So I'm gonna do a quick introduction of who you are. And you tell me if that's completely bullshit or you are happy with what I said. So basically, Matt is American. We met last year at a remote work conference in Spain. Now he's based in Singapore, where he co-founded Venture L, which is the leading platform for freelancers to run their business. Previously, he worked at Microsoft in America, and he's also the author of the upcoming book, The Human Cloud. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. That was like 79% bullshit.
79% bullshit?
Mm-hmm. Nah, just kidding. It was like pretty spot on. It was good.
Pretty spot on. Okay, do you want to tell us a little bit more about your background and what you're doing now?
For sure. Yeah. So when you think me, just think freelance. Started as a freelancer, then led to leading teams of freelancers, both to help startups and to help enterprises. Then built a lot of the software behind freelance platforms and freelance models. I was early at a company called Gigster, where we did custom software development using 100% freelancers. Think if you want to build a mobile app, web app, or full digital transformation. So we were doing projects, you know, multi-million dollar projects through all freelancers. And then most recently was at Microsoft, enabling leading enterprises to hire, manage, and work with freelancers. You'd think if you want to go hire a freelancer, you can take a credit card and go to Upwork if you're a startup or a little small business. But for these massive enterprises, it's crazy hard, specifically with, it's not the sexiest, but like security, compliance, and integration. So built a product called the Toolkit or the Freelancer Toolkit, and that enabled every company to hire at scale these freelancers. And so from that, sort of the problem statement I've always been solving for is how to enable individuals, companies, you name it, to embrace the freelance economy, both being a freelancer, hiring freelancers, and building businesses around freelancers. So as you said, I currently lead a company called Venture L, where an operating system for freelancers to scale, and then coming out with a book in January called The Human Cloud. Fun fact on the book, it took over 15 freelancers, everything from researching, writing. We did have a comedian come in. So if anyone wants to know like best case studies of using a freelancer, for me, it's been having a comedian come in and make us sound funny. So awesome. But yeah, so that's me.
Jetzt kommt ein kleiner Werbespot.
Aufgepasst! Wusstest du, dass HR-Teams heutzutage mit mehr Aufgaben denn je konfrontiert sind? In der aktuellen Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 von Sage, wurden HR-Teams aus 7 verschiedenen Ländern und über 20 Branchen befragt, um top aktuelle Insights in der Entwicklung des Personalwesens zu geben. Sage entwickelt HR-Tools und Software für dein Unternehmen, um Lohnabrechnungen, Personalmanagement, Buchhaltung und mehr zu vereinfachen. So, und die Studie von Sage zeigt unter anderem, dass ganze 91% der HR-Teams angeben, dass ihre Arbeitsbelastung im letzten Jahr zugenommen hat, aber gleichzeitig glauben 79% der Befragten, dass Automatisierung ihre Prozesse zukünftig verbessern und Zeit sparen kann. Ebenfalls spielt auch KI eine große Rolle. Derzeit nutzen etwa ein Drittel bereits Chatbots wie ChatGPT in ihren Prozessen und ca. 3/4 der PersonalleiterInnen sind sich bereits sicher, dass KI die Arbeitsweise im HR revolutionieren wird. Du merkst, die Studie ist vollgepackt mit Statistiken, überraschenden Erkenntnissen und Tipps für HR-Führungskräfte, die vorankommen wollen und zeigt eine Momentaufnahme der sich stetig wandelnden Rolle von HR heute. Am besten schaust du dir die Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 selbst an. Unter digitalkompakt.de/Sage, S-A-G-E, kannst du sie dir komplett kostenlos herunterladen. Und wie immer findest du alle Infos auch auf unserer Sponsorenseite unter digitalkompakt.de/Sponsoren.
Werbung Ende.
Amazing. Yeah, really cool. I'm very excited for the book, by the way. And one of those things that you just said, I think rang very true, that for large corporates, it's very hard to hire freelancers. another reality that I want to put to your attention, but obviously that is a difference between what I have experienced in the US and Germany, is that in the US it's a lot more common to have freelancers work remotely. So you'd hire someone, and that they are remote is kind of part of the fact that they are a freelancer. Whereas in Germany, pre-COVID or pre-coronavirus, it was very common that you hire freelancers to come into your office and then work alongside your regular staff and employees in that office. So it's not remote at all. And often freelancers are very frustrated about it. I know personally a lot of freelancers that said, well, this is a challenging thing. Why do I have to go into this office? And right now, they're loving the fact that work has become more remote and that freelancers and also agencies work remotely now with companies. So now the big question really is, like, how can they make that work? You know, I think you touched upon security. I think that's one of those interesting elements. How does that, affect there, and what other influences are there in that collaboration?
Yeah. So the remote freelancer question, in terms of why companies in the US predominantly work with remote freelancers, it's actually a legal thing, specifically with compliance. And so one of the giant worries of a US corporation hiring freelancers is, can I get in trouble for compliance? And that means, am I misclassifying a worker that should be a full-time employee as a 1099 contractor? And the implications are, if you misclassified, you should have been giving them benefits and paying unemployment insurance and the various things. And so working full-time or working on-site is actually one of the criteria that you can get in trouble for. And so there's a bunch of them. One of them is this person working more than 30 hours a week for you? Do they have other clients, or are you their main means of money? And being on site is also one of those. And so it's funny, that's actually one of the major reasons that US companies don't have on-site freelancers. With that said, they do have on-site temp workers and staffing workers and agencies. But the difference with freelance, which we can get into why it's harder to hire freelancers, it's kind of like the wild, wild west in terms of the infrastructure to go and hire these people. And so you can go through a freelance platform, you can go through consultancies, but hiring a freelancer, the beauty of it, it's called direct to talent, right? So you're taking out the middle layer of buildings and partners that take people out to lunch. But with that said, now goes some of the security and security protocols to help you out. But yeah, that's actually the main reason, is companies don't want to get into compliance trouble of that and having people full-time that are on-site.
Ah, super interesting. Yeah, we definitely do not have that. We have other regulations about this, which is similarly about, here it's called Scheinselbstständigkeit. So whoever speaks German will understand that word. It's very long and complex. It's basically about this, right? Like misclassifying a freelancer. And I think the main criteria there is if that person is earning most of their revenue through you as their main client, there is a cut where it says, like, okay, no, you should, you know, actually employ this person and pay them the benefits that they deserve. So yeah, I think for us, it's not the physical aspect of it or the location, but it's more about how much are you providing work to this one client. So yeah, I think from that, I think there has been a lot more experience in the US working remotely with freelancers. So are there very key aspects of a successful collaboration between a freelancer and a company that is largely on site?
Yeah, for sure. So think about the barrier of being remote. It's hard enough with full-time employees. And a lot of companies are feeling that as they've switched over. Some of the crazy stats, actually, in 2018, only 63% of companies had people working remote. I was so surprised when I heard that, because I've been remote my whole life. And actually, the first thing I did at Microsoft was I was like, hey, I'm going to be remote 90% of the time. You can challenge me, but the product's not going to get built if I can't work remotely. And so it's like crazy to me as someone who's been in this, you know, remote world. But so with that said, the general, one of the hardest parts is collaboration. How do you work together in a remote, or how do you work together when no longer a manager can come down to your office and say, hey, are you doing this? Or hey, can you work on this? And so it requires a lot of sort of differences in the way you work. It's very asynchronous, meaning you can't just work spontaneously of people going in and out of each other's office. You have to be sort of understanding what each other is doing at a more proactive level, meaning you can't just be like on a Tuesday, hey, can you do this? You have to have things planned out maybe week by week. So that's already when you're dealing with full-time workers being remote. You now add a freelancer who's independent, and it can seem like a nightmare, because that freelancer might be in the building, or, you know, working for only a day. They might be working for a week or a month. And one of the major things I heard when I started helping companies with freelancers was they were like, why would I onboard this employee? It takes me 6 months to onboard a full-time employee. Why would I now onboard a freelancer who's going to be gone in a month? And so all of that time it took me to onboard them is a nightmare. So that's one of the major things I hear, actually, is that it's already hard enough with remote full-time employees. Now add on the layer that a freelancer is gone within a day or a week or a month. And we can talk about some of the strategies around that, but that's been the general challenge is, oh man, what was already hard is harder because they're not even my full-time employee.
Absolutely. So let's dive into the strategy. So what do I do? I have someone for a project. Maybe that's a 3-month project. The person's only going to work for me, but maybe I also have a freelancer that is juggling 2 or 3 other clients. What are the key elements about like building trust with that person quickly? What kind of processes do I need to build for tracking work? And then, you know, what about culture and inclusion? Like how much do I want and expect that person to be a fit for like what's going on in the company?
Yes. So let's talk how to start that engagement. I think the most important first step that you have to do is you have to scope out the work properly. And what I mean by that is you really have to have a clear understanding of what needs to get done. One fundamental difference in hiring freelancers versus full-time is you don't have room to onboard. And so when you hire a full-time employee, you can have a lot more conversation around, you know, I hired you for this, but can you take on X, Y, or some other things? When you hire a freelancer, you're hiring them for that exact output. One of the major differences is when you're hiring a full-time employee, a job rec is usually based around skills, and you do things like 5+ years of experience in Python or this exact skill. Freelance is not about that. It's generally about outcomes. And so it's something like we need this landing page completed. We need this article written or you name it. And so that's generally the first thing that's really hard is making sure you understand the scope of work required. Now, second thing that's generally a huge hiccup is the hiring manager or the person doing the hiring. You're usually not the expert. And so step one that I have to do with a lot of companies that are hiring is understand that you don't necessarily know what you're hiring for, and you have to put the trust in the talent themselves. Freelancers are the expert here. You're no longer the expert. And so the first thing is you figure out the scope and you make sure you're very, very clear on what outcome you're looking for. And then step two is you trust the freelancer in sort of teaching you what's required to get there. One thing that I've done from an early age, and I think this is because, to be honest, I've been hiring freelancers before I even knew anything. And so to me, my default was, well, can you teach me? Like, it wasn't like I'm the expert. It was like, I know I'm only, you know, 20 years old. Can you please teach me what's required to get here? But so step one, outcome. Step two, really, really letting the freelancer take ownership of what's required to get there. And if you think about like a statement of work or a proposal document or a product roadmap, sort of letting them control what's required to get this over the finish line.
Okay, absolutely. Completely get that. So basically you're saying instead of doing a 6-month onboarding process to get this person up to speed with what you want them to do, you first got to think about what outcome do I want? What's the scope of the work? Hardest thing is defining a project and not really knowing the how, right? Because then in the second step, you are not the expert. The how is determined by the freelancer. They're basically going to advise you on like how to get to that outcome that you want.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
And a freelancer too. So this is where, you know, good freelancers differentiate themselves in this process. They ask good questions and they show you what the engagement will look like. And so just like working with an agency, right? Or what makes a consultancy good is generally they have a partner there who takes in the requirement. And within a week or 2 weeks or you name it, you have a really, really good statement of work document. Freelancers are similar. The good freelancers are going to ask good questions. One thing to look for is expect to learn. So if it's a good freelancer, they're going to teach you a lot of things that you didn't know about what success looks like and what questions you should be looking for. And then they should bring you in also in what this will look like in terms of in week one, this is what will happen. This is what I need from you in week two, week three, yada, yada, yada. So use that as an indicator of a good freelancer is do they take control of the engagement?
Okay, amazing. How involved do I have the freelancer in my company would be the next question that comes up in my head. It's like, yes, I'm the hiring manager. I have an outcome. What other people are involved in the project? Do I give them access? Like, is that person going to be fully involved in all my communication channels? Are there any best practices you can share there? And I think maybe touch on that security topic there as well, right? Like, how do I cover myself as a large company or even just any company bringing on an external person about all these internal documents?
Yeah. So I think what every freelancer is looking for when they say is all freelancers are looking for a good client. And when you think about what a good client means, it's different every single freelancer, but sort of at our core as freelancers, we're looking to be respected for our work. And so we're not necessarily looking to have a water cooler engagement with all of your employees and feel like we're in every single communication channel, but we do want to be respected. And the way that we're respected is by you trusting us in doing good work and not doing little things like yanking us with feedback. I'll give you some quick like client no's, huge client no. Don't think you're the expert. That's like the biggest thing, right? Don't go in and tell a freelancer do A, B, C, D. Give them the outcome. Trust they'll get it there. Thing two, know what you want in terms of if you give feedback, don't give them feedback every 5 seconds. Give them feedback only twice and have it be very, very tangible, good feedback. So at its core, that's sort of the first thing is learn how to be a good client. When we come to security, this is where it's really tough. And to be honest, it's going to be probably company specific. So if you're sitting at a large company like Microsoft, here, good luck. Good luck with all the file sharing and security required to actually work with these freelancers. Most likely, you're going to be working just through email, and you're going to not want to bring them into every single thing you have. Specifically, I'll give you two sort of major oh no red flag moments that should scare the crap out of you. First is, let's say you bring a freelancer into a folder. That folder has another file that's talking about an upcoming layoff. Nightmare, right? What if that becomes public? Second thing that we used to always have to worry for is, what if you give them, say, a spreadsheet, and in another tab, there's customer data? Well, now you're at risk of 4% of global revenues because of GDPR. So with security, be very, very careful. I would say advise your company policy. And that would be my advice. There's many things that can go wrong, but so long as you follow your company policy, you should be good.
Okay. So what I take away here is that, first of all, we got to learn how to be a good client, right? As a larger company, figuring out that right level of communication and involvement together with the freelancer. I guess that's what you're saying. You know, some people maybe want to be more involved. They want to, you know, get to know more people in the company, and other people just want to, or other freelancers just want to be entirely disconnected, and that's fine too. So I think having those different layers in remote work or in remote people you're working with, a freelancer is different than my remote employee who I want to be fairly close with and have my, you know, my jour fix, and I, you know, speak with them regularly. The freelancer may actually want less. So figuring that out together with the freelancer is kind of the key there, to, you know, also go according to their preference. And in terms of security, I think what you said was really interesting. You said, well, most of it will go through email. Again, in remote work, right? If, you know, when I talk to some companies that are, you know, now switching their communication to mostly remote and they still rely heavily on internal email, one of the first thing I advise them is to get away from that, because internal email is such a, you know, horrible way of communicating efficiently with your colleagues. But when you have it on a security level, you have those emails as that security protection of, this is where I can control my information flow. It is an external flow. So considering the freelancer as an external part of your organization, not so much an internal one. That brings me to the question, if I only communicate through email with that person, how do I avoid misunderstandings, miscommunication, the angry, you missed that deadline, or, you know, built up resentment that can sometimes happen? I have seen many a freelance project go horribly wrong, mostly because of communication. How do I mitigate that then?
So that's an awesome question. It all comes down to how you've scoped out what's going to happen, when, and what's needed. And so the biggest thing that to be honest, as a client, this is where I would be very upfront with your freelancers, that the freelancer probably needs to own this. It's really not the client's responsibility to be the project manager. 99.9% of the times, it is the freelancer. So what you mentioned always happens, right? Where it's Friday, the deliverable was due on Friday morning, you don't get it till Monday, what's going on? Other things though, there can be other things that have happened that sort of influence that. For example, let's say something was due on Friday, the freelancer sent it to you on Thursday or sent it to you on Wednesday and you never gave feedback. Is that the freelancer's fault or is that your fault? And so this is where I go back to, it's not only really, really scoping out what needs to happen by when and who needs to do what, but also sort of this internal communication, the communication rules. And so if you worked in consulting, you always have a statement of work, but then you also have what's called an SLA, a service level agreement. And so statement of work says what needs to happen or what's going to get done. SLA says, how are you actually going to work together? And so this is where, as a freelancer, these should be asking questions like this. Things like, when you deliver this, how many rounds of feedback are you responsible for, or are you going to be able to get? Also, if you don't give feedback, what happens? Also, if you don't give feedback, how does payment happen? Because this is actually one of the biggest nightmares for the freelancers is, let's say you're doing a thing with a bunch of different milestones and you don't give feedback, so the milestone can't get completed. Does the freelancer get paid now? So I would advise, the thing that we always advise is, trust in the freelancers, number one. But make sure the freelancer understands that they are going to be the one driving this. And little things like project management, yada, 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 it all comes down to good communication from their side, meaning being proactive. So personally, if you don't know when something is due, that's probably a fault on the freelancer. And what we advise is, for our freelancers, do have one point of reference. So if it's email, it's email. Some companies have them come onto their Trellos or Asanas or Microsoft Teams or Jiras or you name it. That's why I say it's contingent on your company policy, because if it's your company policy that they can't come onto your Trello, it's going to go through email. And like you said, in a perfect world, you're getting out of email, but the reality is you don't know where it's going to happen. So the point of truth is that beginning sort of statement of work where you just really understand what needs to happen by when and who needs to do what.
Jetzt kommt ein kleiner Werbespot.
Aufgepasst! Wusstest du, dass HR-Teams heutzutage mit mehr Aufgaben denn je konfrontiert sind? In der aktuellen Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 von Sage, wurden HR-Teams aus 7 verschiedenen Ländern und über 20 Branchen befragt, um top aktuelle Insights in der Entwicklung des Personalwesens zu geben. Sage entwickelt HR-Tools und Software für dein Unternehmen, um Lohnabrechnungen, Personalmanagement, Buchhaltung und mehr zu vereinfachen. So, und die Studie von Sage zeigt unter anderem, dass ganze 91% der HR-Teams angeben, dass ihre Arbeitsbelastung im letzten Jahr zugenommen hat, aber gleichzeitig glauben 79% der Befragten, dass Automatisierung ihre Prozesse zukünftig verbessern und Zeit sparen kann. Ebenfalls spielt auch KI eine große Rolle. Derzeit nutzen etwa ein Drittel bereits Chatbots wie ChatGPT in ihren Prozessen. Und ca. 3/4 der PersonalleiterInnen sind sich bereits sicher, dass KI die Arbeitsweise im HR revolutionieren wird. Du merkst, die Studie ist vollgepackt mit Statistiken, überraschenden Erkenntnissen und Tipps für HR-Führungskräfte, die vorankommen wollen, und zeigt eine Momentaufnahme der sich stetig wandelnden Rolle von HR heute. Am besten schaust du dir die Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 selbst an. Unter digitalkompakt.de/Sage, S-A-G-E, kannst du sie dir komplett kostenlos herunterladen. Und wie immer findest du alle Infos auch auf unserer Sponsorenseite unter digitalkompakt.de/Sponsoren.
Werbung Ende.
Okay, so we're basically scoping or circling back to that initial very important point that we had, which is basically the scope of work and then also the agreements that follow that, right? You mentioned the SLA, which is just essentially the agreement, how you're going to work together. The more precise that is, the better. Okay, now the question would be, so I have a project and I want to pick a freelancer, right? And I want to figure out who's the right person to, you know, go through this. I scoped it out. Now I'm going to, you know, look at different people who want to do that. How do I find out who's the right person to, you know, work on this with?
I love this question. I mean, just like you pick an agency, to be honest. You bring in 5, you throw up a basic outcome that you're looking for. I would say what you have to make sure that you understand is what you think needs to get done from an outcome perspective. And you do need to have a very tangible way to understand and show that. For example, if I say I want a keynote deck done, I don't just say I need a keynote deck done. I have comparables of past decks so that when a freelancer bids for the project or you're having these conversations, you're not just saying, can you do this? But you're also making sure that the freelancer shows you what they've done prior that's related to that. So that's my first check, is I always make sure that, is this freelancer done something that's relevant to what I'm looking for? Which means it's up to me to have past comparables of what I'm looking for. A second thing is, now you have the conversation, right? And that's all stuff you do sort of pre even talking with the freelancer. The second thing is, when you have the freelancer conversation, do you learn from that person? Do you like the questions that they're asking? Do you feel like you have trust in what they're doing? And then the third thing that I personally monitor for, and this depends on the type of project, but let's say it's a quick article. This probably wouldn't be as important, but let's say you're having a freelancer do something like a website. Ensuring what happens next, and can this freelancer take it on? What I mean by that is, if you're sitting in a company, you most likely don't need just this freelancer. You probably need multiple freelancers to get something that's complex done. So if you say a website, you probably need SEO, you probably need graphic design, you probably need front end, and potentially even some back end development. So while you're having these conversations with the freelancers, you're not only looking for, is this freelancer relevant to my specific area and what I'm looking for? You're also looking for, can this freelancer scale according to my unique demands? Which you're looking for, are you just an individual freelancer, or do you have resources to take this on? Which comes back to, when have you done this in the past?
Okay, so what I take away from this is actually picking a freelancer is quite different than it is selecting the right person for a job. I mean, we're, you know, here in the remote world, we're saying, okay, we've got to figure out, does the remote collaboration work? I think that's one of those elements that just a baseline across everything. But when you pick a freelancer, you're much more looking for the proven track record of that person. Have they delivered that outcome before? Whereas often when you hire, well, you hire for, you know, past experience, but you also hire for potential, right? What you said, you know, hiring someone with 5 years of experience in Python, but that person having a career, that person, you know, should fit with their personality to the team. So you have a lot more layers. With freelancers, you're actually taking that complexity out, and it's a lot more about getting that job done, right?
And you know what I do too, to take that complexity even more out, is you start small. You start small on something risk-free that proves their competence. And so one thing I do, if let's say that it's a website or a keynote deck or something like that, I have them craft the statement of work and I do charge for it. So I'll say like $150, $250, $300 for you to actually fill out the statement of work, and you better have a product roadmap, comparables, you name it. And then also in the brief, I make sure I do something like, you know, put your favorite GIF in the last page or something like that, just to show the level of detail. And I've heard that a lot, actually, of people who do that. So beyond just the first things I told you, also start small in terms of you don't have to hire for the, you know, 15 to 50K immediately. This is the beauty of freelance. You can start really, really small, see who's good and who's not good. And sometimes, to be honest, I don't even interview because I know that if someone's funny, I'm going to immediately find them intelligent and want to work with them. So sometimes I don't even interview for the job. I just say, you know, deliver a statement of work. It'll be $150 and I judge from there.
Amazing. Okay. That basically brings us to the potential that freelance has for a company, right? You say you can find an expert. You don't, if you have a process nailed down, you don't need to interview that person. You can get something, you have an outcome that you need to get done and you very quickly can find a person who's able to do that. So I want to switch gears a little bit here and talk about the human cloud, and you're the expert on it. I don't want to say too much on it. Explain to us really briefly what you mean with the human cloud and then we can take it from there.
Yeah, super simple. We're in it right now. The fact that we're working virtually and digitally, that's it. When I think about like literally that's it's the easiest element, it's the fact that we can do 99.9% of the stuff digitally and remote. The only thing I'd add on where freelance comes in is that the human cloud is the transformation from a physical full-time office to digital, remote, and independent-based models.
Okay. I think the key aspect here that we, you know, have touched upon with freelance is the independent part, right? I think traditionally, you know, companies still think of themselves as like a finite organization with employees, with assets, with clients, with contacts, with vendors. And what you're proposing, or what the human cloud is that access to experts and knowledge and stuff that can be done very quickly, very easily by people that are independent and external to that organization, right? So how do I find those people? How do I find those people, right? Like we're all in the cloud. We're all virtually now on our computers. You're in Singapore. I'm in Berlin. Yes. And I think across the globe now, people are working remotely through Zoom, Microsoft Teams, and so on. But where do I find those in that cloud, the right people to work with me?
Yep, 100%. And a little bit deeper too behind that, right? Of like, what we're not saying is that we'll be 100% freelancers. Absolutely not. But there will be a higher significant majority of freelancers. And the way that companies are forming in the human cloud is that it's, think about it like sort of you have your core tribe. And instead of hiring agencies or contractors or like through traditional platforms, you'll hire freelancers. And so instead of being like 50-50, because a lot of it's kind of not a secret, right? Where a lot of Silicon Valley companies are heavily contingent. Like Google's over heavily contingent. They actually gotten some bad PR, I think, earlier this year about it. But so a lot of companies already have contingent. What the human cloud says is that full-time will go down from a percentage perspective and get picked up by freelancers or by independent work. So at Venturel, we're 80% freelancers, 20% full-time. And even down to the working teams, because a lot of the driver of this is actually the shift to agile. So in a company, when you used to have, say, one product manager and then a full-time associate, a full-time engineer, a full-time designer, full-time developer, what the human cloud can do is per every full-time product manager, you can now outsource freelancers to cover that. And so that's what me personally, when I was at Microsoft, I was a product manager and I didn't need headcount. I just needed budget to be able to hire freelance designers, developers, you name it. And that's what built my product. So just clarify there. Now, in terms of where these people are, think about it as a continuum. In the middle, you do have a freelance platform. So Upwork, TopTal, freelancer.com, there's millions of them, right? And then if you think about all the way to the left, you have the actual relationships. And so that's LinkedIn. I like to say that's actually places that you wouldn't expect, but that is very like human interaction. So Reddit, a lot of people actually get hired from Reddit, Facebook groups, industry specific groups. So then we go all the way to the right. And now we actually have sort of niche freelance platforms. So if you're looking for a finance and accounting professional, Paro.io, marketing professional, We Are Rosie, customer success, Instant Teams. And so all the way to the right, you start to see these niche verticalized freelance platforms. For you as a company, totally dependent on your circumstance, if you are a large enterprise, Upwork is great from a procurement HR related positioning, meaning they understand what you need to engage with these professionals. If you're smaller and you're okay with some of the security weaknesses, then just hire the person directly and treat them no different than another agency. And then all the way to the right, if say you're a marketing team looking to fully revamp a digital presence or something like that, you might want to go with one of the more verticalized platforms because they understand your specific needs better than the alternatives.
Absolutely. What I hear a lot there, and maybe that's due to the fact that now I'm in Berlin for a little bit longer. You know, we're looking at the German market a lot more recently. And again, you mentioned a bunch of platforms that are very specialized in specific fields, right? I think that's something that's very common to the US. Of course, you have a larger market there. You can have a platform that's just finance and accounting professionals. In Germany, I think that's starting up, but it's not so much there yet. So I feel like the whole platform model, people here are struggling with a little bit, but what you said about, building those relationships on LinkedIn and finding people on Reddit and in groups. So I think that's heavily underestimated. If you don't hire full volume so much, when you say, well, I have a huge project, I need all these freelancers, I need mass a little bit, I need that platform. But the other end of the spectrum, you're like, well, I have an outcome that I need done. And I have, this kind of very occasional need for a freelancer. It's actually quite wise to just build a network, have that and hone those relationships so you can have someone work with you fairly quickly. Because one of those typical things about freelancers is availability, right? It's like, okay, when can you take on the next project? Ideally, they are book through, like, what's the dream? You have at least like 6 months of work lined up and you don't have to hustle for the next gig, right? So also availability of people is one of those big aspects there. I do want to close up a little bit with the geography. And I think one of those elephants in the room, which basically is geographical arbitrage, right? Which we also call the race to the bottom. When you talk about different platforms, we have the Upworks and the Fivers and so on. Hiring someone for $2 an hour is possible on those platforms. What are your thoughts on this? And where do you think, maybe as a larger question to close off, it's like, where do you think the world is headed with that option, with that global talent pool?
Yeah, you opened up a nice can of worms.
Sorry about that.
But I would love to talk hours about how... So here's my take. At a high level, we need to shift from platforms sort of being the facilitator to the freelancers themselves being the facilitators. What I mean by that is that most platforms, and I am excluding some of the niche verticalized platforms because they can provide a really, really good service for the freelancers. But if you look at the core of a freelance platform, what it is it's no different than an eBay bidding system, meaning you have a two-sided market. And on one side, you have a million freelancers, and the other side, you have, say, 500 clients. Now, if it's balanced, maybe that's okay. Meaning if you have enough clients where when they post a job, you don't have a million freelancers outbidding each other. But when it's not balanced right now, meaning you have 16 million freelancers on a platform and say maybe only $1 million of spend or enough spend that when you post up your project, you have hundreds of freelancers just outbidding each other. And then it comes back to what you're talking about, where someone who's in a lower cost country is able to outbid. And then freelancers who are new outbid, and it becomes a giant race to the bottom. So sort of at its core, I do believe that freelance platforms are fundamentally flawed in that if they have an auction bidding system, they're inherently going to create a race to the bottom. With that said, and this is sort of where we fit, is we believe the power is in the actual talent and the people themselves. And so most freelancers don't need a platform. And when you go and you actually start working with these people, you'll realize real quick that you don't need a freelance platform to physically keep working together, but they need the tools to scale themselves, meaning they have to deal with finances. They have to deal with just an ERP system or enterprise resource planning system. So my sort of master belief is that the freelance economy needs to put the power in the talent themselves. With that said, freelance platforms do solve a very, very, very important problem of helping with the discovery and helping introduce the market so that freelance isn't just this vague thing. But with that said, my sort of hope on the race to the bottom, we could talk hours for this, but my fervent belief is that the power has to belong to the people themselves and not a external platform.
Awesome. I think that's a very, very good last statement to end on, Matt. I want to say thank you so much for, of course, being part of this, calling in all the way from Singapore. And I'll hear everyone on the next episode.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jetzt kommt ein kleiner Werbespot.
Aufgepasst! Wusstest du, dass HR-Teams heutzutage mit mehr Aufgaben denn je konfrontiert sind? In der aktuellen Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 von Sage, wurden HR-Teams aus 7 verschiedenen Ländern und über 20 Branchen befragt, um top aktuelle Insights in der Entwicklung des Personalwesens zu geben. Sage entwickelt HR-Tools und Software für dein Unternehmen, um Lohnabrechnungen, Personalmanagement, Buchhaltung und mehr zu vereinfachen. So, und die Studie von Sage zeigt unter anderem, dass ganze 91% der HR-Teams angeben, dass ihre Arbeitsbelastung im letzten Jahr zugenommen hat, aber gleichzeitig glauben 79% der Befragten, dass Automatisierung ihre Prozesse zukünftig verbessern und Zeit sparen kann. Ebenfalls spielt auch KI eine große Rolle. Derzeit nutzen etwa ein Drittel bereits Chatbots wie ChatGPT in ihren Prozessen. Und ca. 3/4 der PersonalleiterInnen sind sich bereits sicher, dass KI die Arbeitsweise im HR revolutionieren wird. Du merkst, die Studie ist vollgepackt mit Statistiken, überraschenden Erkenntnissen und Tipps für HR-Führungskräfte, die vorankommen wollen, und zeigt eine Momentaufnahme der sich stetig wandelnden Rolle von HR heute. Am besten schaust du dir die Studie HR-Trends, die Zukunft der Personalarbeit 2024 selbst an. Unter digitalkompakt.de/Sage, kannst du sie dir komplett kostenlos herunterladen. Und wie immer findest du alle Infos auch auf unserer Sponsorenseite unter digitalkompakt.de/Sponsoren.
Werbung Ende.